8 p.m. This is Radio Ghana.
Good evening, and you're welcome to Behind the News, our news and current affairs program which examines issues from the perspective of newsmakers and experts. My name is Agatha Samoa, and tonight, Ghana Integrity Initiative calls for resignation of public officials who have contested party primaries. Will this call be heeded? What happens if it is ignored? And is the right to information bill lost in the ledge? How soon will it be passed? It's Behind the News live on Radio Ghana Accra and on all our radio FM stations across the country. Our text line is 0266 677570. Now, the Ghana Integrity Initiative is asking all public officials contesting the parliamentary seats to resign their positions. In its fourth monthly press release titled, "These People Must Resign Immediately," the GII said its call is based on the relevant provisions of the Constitution, the Criminal Code 1960 Act 29, among other provisions. So why the call now? Vitis Azim is the Executive Director of the Ghana Integrity Initiative. You are welcome, sir.
Thank you.
So who is a public officer to begin with?
Well, the Constitution lists a number of agencies that are described as public officers. But the most important part is the civil service, which is the people that are working in the ministries. But then it also counts the Ghana Armed Forces, the police service, the immigration service, the Ghana Customs and Preventive Service, the IRS, Internal Revenue Service. It lists them.
So what is wrong with a public officer contesting on a political party's primary?
Well, one, the thing is that the Constitution has said that they are not allowed to exhibit their political affiliation. And I think the rationale is the fact that there is a conflict of interest when you are there. For example, if you go and contest a party primary, you have publicly declared that you belong to a particular party. Then you lose or you win, and you come back and you're still sitting at your desk and rendering services to people. When I'm in the opposition, or even if I had contested against you, then I come there needing the services that you're offering. For example, let's say the police. You have two people, one from your party and one from the other party, having a problem, and then you go and arrest them. Even if, no matter how much you try to be as honest and fair as possible, the other person will definitely say that, oh, because I contested with you, you want to deal with me. So I think these are the things that the framers of the Constitution took into consideration and come out with this law.
So as we speak, what sanctions can be applied to these public officials if they flout their laws?
Well, the thing is that you either voluntarily resign or you get fired. And it happened before. Because even the law, the Constitution says that it defines who can qualify to be, to contest, to be in Parliament. And once you're a public servant, among the list of services in, mentioned, you don't qualify to go to Parliament. The only way for you, if you still want to go to Parliament, is to resign from where you are. That then lifts that ban from you.
So why the call now? These people have been in office for some time now, and they'll be contesting seats. Why the call now?
Because the elections are getting nearer, the campaigns are heating up, and we don't want any confusion. We want to alert those people in that situation to the fact that they are disobeying the Constitution, they are contravening the Constitution if they continue to stay in their positions. And Parliament is the body that enacts laws for Ghanaians. So if you want to be elected to join the group that will enact laws for this country, you must be seen to be upholding the Constitution. And so we are just alerting people that, please, if you know you are in this position, you have to resign. And we are also telling the employers, the supervisors of these people, that if they don't resign, then you have to fire them because they are contravening the Constitution.
But Article 94, subsection 3 of the 19th Constitution categorically states that public officers do not qualify to stand for parliamentary election, but the law is silent on whether public servants are free to stand for parliamentary elections?
Well, I think it is about the same thing. Whether it's parliament or whatever, it's still the same issue. And so you do not qualify. In fact, the constitution says you don't qualify to go to parliament. And if you don't qualify to go to parliament, it means you don't qualify to even contest the primaries. Because the beginning of going to parliament is the primaries, where you contest at your party level. And in any case, there's another provision. Article 284 of the Constitution says that a public officer must not put himself or herself in a position where his personal interest will conflict with the public interest. So already, if your party affiliation is a personal interest, so if you decide to contest, you're already allowing your personal interest to conflict with the public interest. And of course, I've told you what would happen if, for example, there is a conflict between two opposing parties, and you are the one that is supposed to handle the issue. You will find yourself in a very tight situation. And no matter how nice you are, how committed you are in fairness and all that, people will still perceive it in a different light.
Does the law equate public servants with civil servants? Because there's silence on it.
No, the law states civil service and also mentions other public services, like the Ghana Armed Forces, the Police Service, the Immigration Service. I've already mentioned those. IRS, Customs, and all that. The law specifically mentions those that are covered by that prohibition.
So do you have specific names?
We don't have specific names. We don't want to mention specific names. We are just, we normally we don't deal with individuals. We are just sending out the message that if you are in this position, know that it is wrong for you to be still occupying your position, so you should leave.
All right, hold the line, as we are also joined on the line by Majority Leader in Parliament, Cletus Avoka. Thanks for your time, Mr. Avoka.
Yeah, good evening.
Good evening. What do you make of the call by the Ghana Integrity Initiative?
Well, I didn't listen to all his input. Can you summarize it for me?
The GII is asking public officials contesting parliamentary seats to resign their positions.
Well, yes, I agree to a large extent on the position taken by the Ghana Integrity Initiative. I think that the Constitution is quite clear on this subject. Therefore, the avoidance of doubt, certain positions that you hold in this country disqualify you from becoming a member of parliament. In other words, you are disqualified from taking part in active party politics. So I think that there are good reasons why it should not be so. There are some sensitive positions that some of us occupy in this country, that if your political identity is demonstrated in public, you find it difficult to be seen to be fair or to be seen to be objective in handling those offices. So it is important that people who want to contest primary, and I agree with Mr. Vital Zim, that it is not just coming to parliament, but once you contest primaries, that means you have decided to take sides in one way or the other as far as the party in the country are concerned, and therefore you disqualify yourself from occupying those positions. So if you intend to contest primaries when you hold such position, you should resign first and foremost before you contest the primaries. And secondly, of course, you can't come to parliament. And like he mentioned, the Constitution has spelled out the civil service, the Ghana Armed Forces, the security services, like fire service, prison service, etc., judicial service, all many other offices that are enshrined in the Constitution. I agree entirely that those of us who have contested primary are occupying these positions, even including parliamentary service, you ought to resign from your work before you contest. If you didn't resign from your work, you have contested primaries, whether you have won or you have lost, you should resign immediately.
But the culture of not resigning, even if the law prevents public officials from contesting parliamentary elections as political party representatives, what are the reasons?
I don't think there are any good reasons. I think it's recalcitrance and it's an affront to the dignity of our constitution and the other laws of the country. And the said people must be compelled to resign.
One could ask, could it be attributed to lack of political willpower to sack or prosecute public officials who flout the laws?
I think that if you are head of department, and then under the constitution, workers under that department are not supposed to contest primaries or contest elections, and then somebody does that, the head of department should draw his attention to the provisions of the constitution or the laws of the country and then ensure that he resigns. otherwise he will be culpable. And any other society, any other member of the society, any other citizen of this country, and particularly if the Ghana initiative, integrity initiative, is aware of such persons, they should bring them to the public forum so that they will be asked to resign.
So what about ruling parties' connivance to shield public officers who stand on the ticket of the party for parliamentary elections?
I think that the attention of the leadership of those political parties should be drawn to the fact that Mr. A or B or Miss A or B, who contest on the primaries of their party and is occupying this position in the country, then ought to resign. And I think that they ought to do so. In my personal view, I've often held the position that even district chief executives who are occupying positions as district chief executives and contest primaries must resign.
So in effect,
holding that in furtherance of the democratic dispensation, in deepening democracy and ensuring the separation of powers and accountability, if you are district chief executive and you want to contest primaries, you must resign. By our constitutional, the spirit and letter of the constitution, the assemblies are non-partisan. Once a district chief executive decides to wear a party t-shirt either to the office or to the rally and the rest of them, he ought to resign.
So what is the best solution to this?
We should engage the political parties in this and then let them know that the culture, the practice and convention of constitution is that if you are occupying a position, that the constitution indicates that you cannot, by virtue of that office, you cannot contest elections, and you still go ahead to contest elections, you should, the party or the government should compel you to resign.
We are grateful for your time. That was the majority leader in Parliament, Cletus Avoka. Now back to you, Mr. Azim. So it appears we have overlooked this legal provision. What could be done to promote this culture of resignation?
Well, it's not like you have a choice. You don't have a choice. If you have been hiding under the excuse that you are not aware, we are bringing it to the public light that this is the situation, so you should resign. It's straightforward. If you are contesting for elections and you were pretend that you were not aware, we are telling you that this is the situation. We've quoted all the relevant laws, so you just have to resign. If you don't resign, your employers, your supervisors will tell you to go. You don't have a choice.
Now, Ghana is practicing a hybrid system of separation of powers and fusion of powers. Could it be the reasons why we are encountering this problem where public officers are not ready to resign before contesting parliamentary seats on political party platform?
It's just that we are not, those who are supposed to enforce the laws are not enforcing the laws. First, at the beginning, the political party should have even ensured that once you are a political officer, you either resign or you don't qualify to contest primaries. But if they didn't do that, and we are now putting into the public light that this is a situation, it's even for the individuals who want to contest to quietly resign without wasting time. But if they don't, the employers should fire them. It has happened before. In 2008, a chief director was seen at a political rally wearing a party paraphernalia, and he was asked to go. So there's no question of the type of government we are running. We have a constitution, and we have to go by that constitution.
All right, just hold the line for us. Tony Forson is a legal practitioner and he has joined the debate to express his personal views on the issue. We are grateful for your time, Lawyer Forson.
Thank you.
Do you share the views of the Ghana Integrity Initiative?
Well, I caught snippets of his argument. And by and large, I have my doubts as to the legality of the issue. By and large, that provision which he quoted regarding Article 296 is that which holds my fancy. But the issue as to the time that the person is supposed to leave the office becomes more of a moral question than a legal question. You see, because if you read the Constitution carefully, it says a person shall not be eligible to be a member of parliament. So the question that arises is, at what time? The question, that is the crucial question that you consider. Is it at the time that he's supposed to take up his seat in parliament as a parliamentarian? Or is it at the time that he's going to stand the elections? Or is it at the time that he's contesting primaries? I believe that the thinking will be that at the time that you are contesting primaries, you anticipate to enter parliament, from which you are disbarred. You understand? So Yes, his Article 296 argument, I think, is flawless. But more and more, when you read the laws, you get the sense as to whether or not the person is to resign at the time he's taken up primaries or at the time that he's going to take up his seat. I've looked at the political parties law. I've looked at the Public Order Act. And all of them seem to be a bit silent on, like, ordinary members of these services. Rather, it is when they want to take up executive positions, for example, which the law disbars them. So I think that I would rather err on the side of caution and say that I would prefer to go with the prescription that once you intend to enter parliament, the moment you take that decision, you must be prepared to resign. I think that it makes for a neater arrangement because, as Kletu said, assuming the person contests primaries, and we take the first leg of my argument, that he's not supposed to resign at that point. Before the elections proper, he will be still in office, let's say contesting on the ticket of Party A or Party B. Where an issue arises where he must be the arbiter, then you see that the argument under Article 296 comes clear, that the person will be perceived, or he would have put himself in a position where his public interest conflicts or likely to conflict with his private interest. So I think that I would buy the argument that for a neater arrangement, once you intend to enter parliament and you fall within these prohibited categories, please, you are developing a democracy. I think that you are better off resigning.
Lawyer Fawcett, what then are your interpretations of a public officer as defined by the Criminal Code 1960 Act 29?
Well, I went ahead to look at the public officer's Declaration of Assets and Disqualification Act 1998, Act 550, which also defines who public officers who are supposed to declare their assets are. And there's a wide compendium. It also goes ahead to declare who a public officer is. And it just clearly says that a public officer includes an office, the emoluments attached to which are paid directly from the consolidated fund or directly out of monies provided by Parliament or an office in a corporation established entirely out of funds or monies provided by Parliament. It goes on and on and on. And there is a schedule which runs from the president, and it includes these two chief executives.
So
the people who are supposed to declare the assets, it excludes the armed forces, but it runs down a whole compendium of persons. So I don't think that we should be hair splitting in this matter. I think that the guidance which this integrity initiative has given, I think it's in the right direction. I mean, as you were saying, there's this phobia about resignation.
Yeah.
But I think that as we develop as a country, people must be bold to take decisions and live with the consequences. All right? For example, people want to, you know, have their cake and eat it so that they will contest elections. If they lose, then, they were not supposed to take up a seat in parliament. You understand me?
Yeah. Then
they go on the head splitting route. But I think that I will buy the argument that once you decide to contest primaries, at that point, either you must resign or you must be pushed.
So dealing with public officers who flout these laws, what is the way forward?
I think, as Kletu said, they must be fished out and smoked. You see, unfortunately, we live in a country where the laws don't seem to be working. And that is what does not give the public the confidence in the system. Unfortunately. And you see, the reasons for the laws not seeming to work do not lie only in one cause. It lies in our social structure. It lies in our relationships. It lies with our friendships. Let me give you one small example. I was sitting somewhere in a police officer's office. He gets a call from a friend who is apparently a big man. He has been caught over speeding.
This is a straightforward matter. You don't need to call your policeman friend and put pressure on him to tell the arresting officer to leave you. You understand me?
We are grateful. Yes.
Social circles have conduced to the laws not working, because everyone wants to use a certain network to get out of trouble once he has gotten into the trouble. If you jump a red light, the policeman catches you. Deal with the situation. Either you go to the court, pay your fine, and you move on, you get your penalty points. That is the only way the society will develop. But if any time anybody has a problem, he has to call a friend who has to call another friend, the law will not work. It's as simple as that.
We are grateful for your time.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Tony Forsen, a legal practitioner. Now back to you, Mr. Azim. So, do you have a time frame for these people to resign?
We don't have a time frame. You know, we're a civil society organization. We are just drawing the attention of the appropriate authorities to deal with those people. In fact, we think that if those involved had pretended that they did not know that this was the situation, tomorrow they should be submitting their resignation letters. But if they still hang on to those positions, then their employers should go ahead and do something about it. And just to add that, the code of conduct for civil service specifically even states, we quoted it in the statement, it goes further than just what the Constitution says, that you don't have to be seen to appear to speak on a platform for a political party. And you cannot contest primaries without speaking for your political party. You are publicly declaring where you belong. So I think there's no two ways about it. As the two speakers have said, they don't have a choice. They should just go. They shouldn't wait to be pushed out.
We are grateful for your time.
Vitus
Azim is the Executive Director of the Ghana Integrity Initiative. It's still behind the news live on Radio Ghana, Accra. Now back to our next story on the right to information. For many who have followed the progress of the Right to Information Bill in Parliament, there is always a glimmer of hope that it may be passed soon. After various consultations, however, the Coalition for the Passage of the Bill is expressing reservations about a seeming delay in the process. Why is the group concerned? What is the state of affairs with the bill? Behind the News finds out more as we've been joined on the line again by Cletus Avoka, the Majority Leader in Parliament. Welcome, sir.
Thank you very much and good evening again.
Good evening. So what is the state of the Right Information Bill as we speak?
Well, happily I must say that the bill has reached an advanced stage in Parliament. The procedure is that normally when a bill is laid before Parliament by the sector minister, the Speaker of Parliament will refer the bill to the appropriate committee. In this respect, this bill will refer to joint committees of communications and information, and then also a committee on constitutional, legal, and parliamentary affairs. So these two committees handle the bill. Now, by our tradition, it is important that we make a law that can stand the test of time, and particularly a sensitive law like the Right to Information Bill. So what the committee engaged themselves with was to have regional tours in the country to be able to sensitize many members of the Ghanaian public on the provisions of the bill and the implications of the bill. Happily, that exercise is over. And I must put on record our thanks and gratitude to the World Bank for financially sponsoring the regional tours, because Parliament per se did not have the funding to do that. Now, having done that, the committee has joint chairman have told me that they are in the process of writing a report, collating the views of the stakeholder consultation. And then after that, they will present the report to Parliament for debate. So I'm hopeful that this May that we will resume, in 15th of May that we will resume, if the committee is able to put itself in order, we'll be able to present the report for debate to be taken through the various clauses.
So
let me state that this is a very, very important bill. I said somewhere that it is important but not a priority, and some civil society do not understand. I say it is important because all other bills that are relevant for the development of these countries are those bills that the executive brings to Parliament. However, the business committee of Parliament will normally be sensitized to be able to prioritize. This bill had to be delayed because we had to complete the petroleum revenue management bill. That is very important for our socioeconomic development, because with the oil fund, we need a legal framework as to how to manage the resources or the revenue accruing from that. Then after that, we have to pass the Petroleum Commission Bill. After that, we have to look at the Presidential Transition Bill, because that can engender conflict if we don't have the legal framework and guidelines to govern one party or government hand over to another. You recall what happened in 2000 and 2001 when NDC was handed over to MPP1, the acrimony and then the stress that we went through. You also recall what happened in 2008 and 2009 when MPP was handed power back to the NDC. So we thought that that was our priority. The Presidential Transition Bill was of a priority to the security and the good governance of this country. So we had to take time off to pass that bill. This includes the fact that we have to look at the budget of the country, we have to look at the state of the nation, address of the president, debate on it, etc. So, yes, these are all important matters, but some of them take precedence over others. I must say positively that we have concluded the discussions on the right to information bill, and it is right for debate. And that is another very tedious matter. Debate means you have to take the bill clause by clause and examine the provision in the original bill and prefer amendments, if any, having regard to the stakeholder consultations and what other members of parliament will conceive. So this is what we are going to do.
With,
so hopefully, I am confident that we will pass the bill before this parliament is dissolved.
With regard to the stakeholder consultations, what emerged from them?
Well, what emerged was the fact that they thought that we should delete provisions where you have to pay a fee to the department that you are seeking the information from, so that it becomes cheaper for the ordinary Ghanaian to access information. They complained of the exemptions. They said there are too many exemptions to the right to information. For example, you appreciate the fact that communication from the ministers or ministries, department agent to the presidency should be exempted because it has not yet reached the presidency and no decision has been taken yet. So if before the chief executive of the country is privy to the information is in public domain, when he has not taken a decision one way or the other, it's not going to go well. And within the communication between the president and the vice president, communication that are of security nature and that will undermine the security of the country ought to be exempted. These and a few others said that some of them are too far-reaching, and therefore they should be looked at and reduced so that the bill will also have effect of giving information to the general public.
So how
are some of the grey areas that we'll have to look at.
So how soon will we see the passage of the right information bill?
As I said, it has reached an advanced stage, and I have indicated that before we rise, before this parliament is dissolved, it is on record that we should be able to pass the bill into law.
We are grateful for your time.
You're welcome.
That was the Majority Leader in Parliament, Cletus Avoka. And also joining us on the line is Afel Money, who is the Vice President of the Ghana Journalists Association. You are welcome, Mr. Money.
Thank you, Honorable Agatha.
What do you say of the wait for the passage?
It's very unfortunate. It is mind-boggling and heart-rending that for a good 10 years, this all-important day has been incubating. And for listening to the Honourable Minister, I'm inclined to believe that Parliament will this time master the political will to give the proposed law the light of day. Some are inclined to subject him to all kinds of rubber stones, but we think it's not important at this stage to continue to cry about spilt milk. What we need to do is to track the political will, which has been so conspicuous by its absence over the past 10 years. The previous government promised to pass the bill into law, and the NDC on page 24 of its 2008 manifesto states categorically that the new NDC government will pass the bill into law. And as the minister said, the next parliament will make an effort to pass the bill into law. And one thing which should be lodged in our memory and which is significant is that the interest in passing a law which will stand the test of time. We don't want the Zimbabwean experience to be replicated in Ghana you know, Zimbabwe has the right information law, but that piece of legislation is sham and inconsequential. So we are not just interested in any law, but a law which will give voice and force to Article 21, Clause 1F of our Constitution, which states that every Ghanaian has a right to receive information.
Mr. Mwani, do you think everything required has been done to push this bill?
The last event with which we participated, I mean the coalition on the right to information participated was this public forum at the National Theatre. We made a presentation, and the relevant committee had gone around the whole country to collate views and what have you. But I believe they need to fast track it. Look, if they had prioritized it, what we need to do now is for Parliament to sharpen the focus on these priorities. It's not a question of procurement being more important than right information, because as far back as 1946, the UN recognized the freedom of information as the touchstone of all freedoms, or in the Ghanaian parlance, the mother of all freedoms. So if as far back as 1946, the world body recognized the supreme importance of freedom of information, then it's heart-rending and mind-boggling that Ghana, you know, has been, you know, too slow in passing this bill into law.
Before I let you go, is the absence of the information bill negatively affecting anything in the country?
To a very large extent, yes. Yes, as a country, we our democracy continues to strike course of attestation nationally and internationally. Our democracy, you know, is seen as a beacon, and we are also regarded as a centerpiece of democracy in Africa. As we speak, we also pride ourselves on the fact that this country enjoys equilibrium in democratic supply and demand. But this does not obscure the fact that we have challenges like lack of transparency in governance, challenges of corruption in governance, either in reform or in the form of perception. So the right to information bill is not a media-specific bill. It's to empower the ordinary Ghanaian to demand information which is being held in trust of the public. So it's to empower us to deepen the culture of transparency, the culture of openness, and then expose the dark spots in governance and other public institutions. Which when quantified, is also incalculable, because corruption, we all know, is still a drawback to our development. And by empowering all Ghanaians to demand, for instance, how much is spent into the road project, who are the beneficiaries of the laws we have in the petroleum sector, for instance, how much does it take for at a sitting in Parliament, how much goes to our MPs, because they are paid with the public purse. These are all pieces of information which can be demanded when this bill is passed into law.
We are grateful for your time.
You are welcome, Agatha.
Afil Mwani is the Vice President of the Ghana Journalists Association. And the Commonwealth Human Rights Initiative has been monitoring what has been happening with the Right Information Bill. What is their view about the weight? Mina Mensah is the Regional Coordinator. You are welcome, Mina.
Thank you very much.
And I believe you've been following our discussion. How is your initiative, the Commonwealth Human Rights Initiative, supporting the process for the passage?
The Commonwealth Human Rights Initiative is a member of the coalition which is advocating for the passage of the bill. So we are working together with the coalition to ensure that an effective and efficient bill is passed.
In your view, why is the right information important?
As Afelmo said earlier on, it is a fundamental human right, and it is the touchstone upon which all other rights develop. If somebody hasn't got information, how does the person even know that he has rights in the first place? Secondly, when we look at development, there are so many things that people can have access to. But because they don't have information on those things, they can't access them. Let's look at the disability rights that people have in this country. The laws are there. 3% common fund. How many disabled people are aware that they can access that fund? And for me, I think that this bill is keeping very long in parliament because we have not connected it to people's right to development. People see it as something that is so far removed from them. But like Mr. Money said, if people are educated and they know that I have a right to ask who is constructing this road, how long was it supposed to take to construct it? How much did it cost? Why has it delayed? I can give a clear example of the Dangsuman Road. I remember sometime this year or last year, the contractor was called and he was being questioned as to why he has kept so long. And he told them on air that they were not the ones who employed him and so did not ask him for that kind of information. But if you have a right to information law, you go to the ministry, you get the information, and then you don't even need to go to the contractor. In any case, the contractor is using public funds. So ideally, such information, which is in private domain, should be given to the people because they are paying for the roads.
So what should be done to speed up the process?
I think that Parliament should make it a priority. If at the end of the day, you are elected as a representative of the people, you are there to ensure that the people's ideals, the people's rights, what the people want is materializing as far as you are concerned. And if you are somebody's representative and the person hasn't got the power to assess what you are doing and to question you, to monitor you, to hold you accountable, then why are you? So Parliament should make it a priority, debate this bill, make sure that the necessary amendments are made, and we have a very, very good bill which will work for us.
We are grateful for your time. Mina Mensah is the regional coordinator of the Commonwealth Human Rights Initiative. It's Behind the News, live on Radio Ghana, Accra, and on all our regional FM stations across the country. Now to the CPP's Congress. The Convention People's Party will this Saturday go to Congress to elect its flag bearer for the 2012 December general elections. Two candidates, Dr. Abusakara Foster and lawyer Bright Akwiti, are vying for the presidential slot. But how prepared is the CPP for this Congress at a time when some analysts perceive the party as struggling to hold itself together? The Deputy General Secretary of the party, Kwame Dantua, is our studio guest. You are welcome, sir.
Thank you, and good evening to Ghanaians. And thank you for having me here.
Good evening, and you are welcome. So how far have preparations gone?
Well, preparations are well underway. Initially, we looked at several venues. We looked at Accra, we looked at Tamale, and we looked at the Western region. And we felt that in the last election, most of the votes that CPP had came from the Western region. And we felt it's a good thing to have this presidential congress there, since we decided to split our congress into two, have the delegates congress and the presidential congress. The delays have come largely because of the biometric exercise. When we went to the Electoral Commission, they indicated that the way the biometric exercise was going, they needed all hands on deck. So really and truly, they couldn't do away with any of their officers. And so they scheduled the dates. They gave us certain dates that we worked with, and 12th May is the date that we accepted. Currently, we have a national organizer in Sekendi. We have some of the officers there. Flags have been erected all through the approaches to the sports stadium and in Sekendi. Everything seems to be on course.
What measures have been put in place to facilitate good patronage and better organization of the Congress.
Well, did you come to our Delegates Congress? If you had come to our Delegates Congress, you would have seen the kind of camaraderie that was going on. And the similar thing will happen now. Even before we started going into Second D, going to Sipon Stadium, the kind of rapport and the kind of interaction that was even happening at the party office, it felt like, you know, it was a real party atmosphere. And we are all looking forward to it. And we hope Ghanaians to tune into the networks and watch, you know, the Presidential Congress, because it's going to be very interesting, I must admit. It's going to be very interesting, and it's going to be very close.
How many delegates are attending this Congress?
2,000 delegates from all over the country, from all the 10 regions of the country. They are all attending this. Some from the northern region and upper west and upper east will arrive tomorrow because of the distance. And then the rest, some will arrive in the evening. So hopefully by 8 o'clock, everybody would be there. And we would do the registration of all the delegates. The following day, we would have a neck meeting between 10 and 12. Then after that, we go in for the election.
About 2,000 delegates. What arrangements have been made to accommodate and feed them?
You see, one of the reasons why we chose Sipon Stadium is that they have accommodation on site. We are busing them. Metromass is busing all our delegates there. From all over the country. We've paid for that. There are people who have been given money to prepare, you know, the meals for the delegates. So everything is on course. That's why I asked you whether you came to the Delegates Congress or the Trade Fair the last time. Everything is on course. No hitch whatsoever.
Can you share with us the itinerary for the Congress?
Well, I just said so.
On
Saturday,
yes,
we would have a neck meeting to look at certain corrections in the constitution. You know, we've drawn up a new constitution, which at the last Delegates Congress was accepted, but there were a few things that we needed to put right. So we've done that. So we will go to NEC to accept the constitution, and then we go into the elections. And you know, it's only two people, so I'm sure it's going to be a nice election, but it's going to be a short one because it's not too many people like the Delegates Congress.
We understand the National Youth Organizer Murtala Mohammed is opposed to the Congress, and he has described it as unconstitutional.
Why? I haven't heard that, but why has he said it's unconstitutional? What's the reason he's given?
He is saying holding the Congress will bring more confusion to the party.
Why?
Is it true?
What kind of confusion is he talking about?
That's why we asked.
I don't see it, because come to the party headquarters now and you should see the way the unity is. We are strong. I mean, I don't know. He has been interdicted, so I don't know why he's sitting out there saying what he's saying. It is not true. It is not a true thing.
Then let's talk more about the campaign tour of the two presidential aspirants. What is your assessment of it?
In terms of their campaigning?
Yes.
Well, they have gone through the whole country, you know, appealing to delegates to vote for them. And it has been very friendly. They, the flag bearers themselves, have been exchanging ideas. You know, so they've been talking together irrespective of the fact that they're in competition. And I mean, it's good. I'm happy with so far what has happened compared to what has happened in the past.
So you are hoping for a successful Congress on Saturday?
I'm not hoping for a successful Congress. I know it's going to be a successful
Congress.
You know
it's Congress. Going to be successful.
Yes. Yes.
Now let's move on. How far has the CPP gone with the much talked merger with the PNC?
Well, we are still in discussions. We are still in discussions with the PNC. The PNC have said to us, they have finished their Congress. They have elected their flag bearer. So really and truly, they wanted us to finish ours. So once that is done, then we would sit with them and see how best we can push the agenda forward. Whether it is going to be an alliance, whether it is going to be a question of, okay, we join you. Those things are all on the table at the present moment, but they are solidly behind us, and we are definitely going to work together for the 2012 elections. There's no doubt about that.
You know, the CPP and the PNC merger has been on board for so long a time. One would ask, what is really causing the delay?
Well, in terms of now or in terms of before, if it's now, this time everybody is on board. You know, it's always good to be honest in politics. There were certain elements who weren't interested in the merger. Both from the opposition parties, well, the two main parties, and people within the CPP and the PNC. That is no more. That is no more. We have come to consensus that what Ghanaians are looking for is for the Nkrumah family to unite. And it just can't happen at once. It would take some time for us to merge. However, in the time that it takes us for us to merge, we would work together as one Nkrumah family.
Earlier today, the PNC says they were waiting for your Congress before taking a decision on the merger. So after the Congress, would we see a CPP and PNC merger?
But before the Congress, we've been talking. The talking has been going all through this period. It hasn't stopped. But the PNC didn't see how we should disrupt our Congress by, you know, these talks we're having. And once we finish our Congress and everything is in motion, yes. And as I said to you, we are definitely working together this time around. There is not going to be any hitch whatsoever. They within themselves and we within ourselves know that the Nkrumah family has to be strong. And we're going to make sure it happens. Irrespective of what has happened in the past. In fact, what has happened in the past has helped us get to the position we are today. And we know what Ghanaians are thinking. Ghanaians are looking for a very credible third force. And they know that credible third force would be in the Nkrumah family.
Would you say the CPP then is the credible third force?
Yes, the CPP is a credible third force. Whatever you do. And please, don't look at the CPP as other members in other parties who claim to be Nkrumah. Because so far as we know, Nkrumah founded one party and one party alone. And the PNC came in to take over from the CPP when the name was taken from us. So we are the legitimate Nkrumah party in this country. And yes, Ghanaians believe, looking at our track record, looking at what we've done in the past, looking at where this country moved with us, nobody has added anything substantial to it. And they believe the CPP can do it. And we will prove to Ghanaians that we can do it.
You can do it. So how do you assess the chances of the party in the 2012 elections?
Well, that is up to the people of Ghana. Listening to the issues and not listening to insults. And if you've watched all along the line, with all these things that have been going on in terms of monitoring the media stations and monitoring abusive language, has anybody heard the CPP come up to say that the CPP has been insulting anybody? We don't believe in that kind of politics. We believe in the politics of issues, and we talk issues. So let's bring it to the table. Let Ghanaians listen to the issues of the parties, and let Ghanaians decide which of the issues will be beneficial to them, which of the parties can really move this country forward. And I believe the CPP and the way we have conducted ourselves can win us this election.
Some are of the view that you should concentrate more on getting parliamentarians into parliament rather than focusing on the presidential slot.
It is not the culture of Ghanaian politics not to have a presidential candidate. Any political party in this country that decides not to have a presidential candidate is dead. And we sat down and we looked at it and we said, no, we cannot do that. Why? Are we not a legitimate political party? The party that brought forth to Ghana, that, you know, brought Ghana into being, that we should not have a presidential candidate? No, not at all. Who then do we lead? Who then do the parliamentarians who are vying for positions, who do they lead? Who is their leader? Yes, we need to increase our parliamentary engagement in parliament. But still, we also need a flag bearer. A flag bearer that would marshal the people, that the people would follow. I mean, after tomorrow, you would see what would happen. Things are going to be different because we are going to work together as a party. Decisions are going to be taken as a party. The campaign team is going to be a party campaign team. So once all this is in place, everybody will see that, yes, the CPP has a leader that they are marshalling behind, and we would make sure that the politics of issues is what we discuss between now and 7th December.
When are you electing parliamentary candidates?
Your parliamentary candidates, it's ongoing at the present moment. And, you know, we're looking, because of the PNC-CPP thing, we're looking at how best can we do it. Certain areas where the PNC is strong, we'll probably not field. Certain areas where we are strong, we'll probably not. But it's all in discussions, and that is ongoing.
One would then ask, after the Congress, what next?
After the Congress?
Yes.
Once the Congress is done, the manifesto is now being prepared. We have gone over it several times, and we'll be launching the manifesto very soon. And then campaigning starts, like any other political party. Campaigning would start. And in fact, I must say that immediately after the Congress tomorrow, either of the flag bearers that win, we are heading for Jomoro to start a rally, to have a rally there, you know. So the campaigning will start in earnest.
Now, some people have broken away from your party. Is the party doing anything to bring them back on board?
When you say some people like who?
Recently, the youth Francis Tete Opai left the party, and I believe some also left with him. So is the party doing anything to bring them back on board?
Political parties thrive on membership. And if people leave a political party, they have their reasons for leaving. However, as they're leaving, others too are coming in. There's one thing I should tell you today, and a lot of people continue to spread this mantra that the CPP is an open people's party. Far from it. Far from it. The leadership of the CPP today is below the age of 54. The leadership. The number of youth who have now taken positions within our committees, the number of youth who are following us on Facebook and Twitter, you cannot call the CPP an old person's party. As compared to the two major parties today, don't they have more older people in there than we do? At the present moment, if you look at the spectrum of CPP membership and you look at the old folks, I can say it's my father who's the oldest. He's heading for 90. Who else is there?
So what are you doing to disabuse people's mind?
Well, this is a part of the thing. And the last election, we made a very, very critical mistake in terms of the fact that everybody expected the CPP to at least have 7%, 8% and hold the balance of power. What did we get? 1.34%. And why did we get 1.34%? Because we were playing media politics instead of playing politics on the ground. And we've learned from that lesson. And we have been going on, you know, on the ground and talking to people. So we don't think that this time round we would get that 1.34%. This time round it would be different. Totally and absolutely different. Because Ghanaians are sick and tired of the two major parties. In fact, our party political slogan for this election is Ghana must work again, and the response is Yabre. And it is true, Ghana for Yabre from these two political parties.
Now, Mr. Jatwa, there are those who have written off the chances of your party unless the Nkrumahs come together as a strong force.
But that is what we've discussed here. Why should they write us off? You see, they shouldn't just get up and write. Listen to the issues. Don't go by perception. Listen to the issues. It's an issue-based election because it's the issues and the manifestos of what the political parties are prepared to do for the people to benefit. That is the first thing. Not others to benefit. The people to benefit. Because as we keep saying in the CPP, this country is for Ghanaians and Ghanaians alone. As we sit here today, can anybody tell me that any of the major industries in this country are led by Ghanaians? Take the telecom industry today. Is there one Ghanaian owning any telecom company? No. Gold industry today, even those companies in Ghana who are trying to be gold mining companies, Ghanaians, are they internationally accepted? No, because we don't have. Who runs those companies now? Foreigners. Our oil industry today, which has just started, and let's face it, we don't have an oil industry, we have an oil field. Today, we are not encouraging entrepreneurs to go into that industry. Yes, it needs building of capacity, but even so, shouldn't government take the lead to make sure that Ghanaians are interested in going into that industry? Isn't it up to government to make sure that Ghanaians have participatory role in the oil industry? We are not doing that. So you find that a lot of the industries we have today are manned by foreigners. And then we have things like pressure on the CD. Why? Some of the areas, some of the reasons is that a lot of money is going out, a lot of money is a lot of CDs is chasing the few dollars, and there's pressure on the CD.
Now, briefly, politics of insult is gaining currently in our political discourse. How do we deal with it from the CPP perspective?
If there's a political party who is encouraging this politics of insults, Ghanaians shouldn't vote for them. Because that is not the right thing to do. It goes to show that they do not put Ghanaians first in whatever they do. They are thinking of themselves first. And it cannot work. It cannot work that way. The CPP, as I said earlier, nobody has pointed to the CPP to say that the CPP is involved in this politics of insults. And why are they insulting? What is it? Because they feel they are better than the others? These two parties have been in power for how many years? Are we still not a peasant society?
So what is the CPP bringing on board when you win power come 2020?
We bring the Ghanaian first. We make sure that even the banks we have today, as we sit here today, the banks cannot even have enough money to even go and bid for some of these big oil contracts that are going. We would bring that first. We would get the Ghanaians, we get Ghanaians together. And the first thing that we would look at is a national development plan. Do we have it? And that national development plan would not be a CPP national development plan. It would be a development plan with all stakeholders on board, so that when governments change, the development plan still goes on.
Now, briefly, what is your message for delegates?
Use your conscience to vote for the right person. The right person that can lead the CPP to power in 2012. And I believe our delegates, as all Ghanaians, are discerning enough to know who out of the two would benefit the CPP and benefit Ghana in general.
We wish you all the best this Saturday.
And hopefully you'll be there.
I will.
Hopefully.
And that was the Deputy General Secretary of the CPP, Kwame Jantwa, who was our studio guest tonight. We are grateful for your time. It's still behind the news. We'll be back.
A bit of a clear, Doctor Basha, don't worry, my definite maima. It do for Banto. Ah, you, Nanamo, who just sell, you could wear it. Oh, sister, my delusion man of our sandal. Well, I may hope for Bantoma. Not so that come a bow to a sandal to you. Mono, a pop on the chicken SP, your phone in a full of called you. Kaka, why ye young one and no go?
Auntie Anya, I think I'm a donor, senior for you, Mamma.
And you're in Emma.
Asa Doctor Mugano and Amagaza.
Yes, see, Dono Jupola, I do be an Yavava. The monopoly next year, but what is Yakoya?
Eh, Ada, if you're a mlo, I think I'm a domaza shaza. Come on, not take your conamla full of Kodiaha.
Yabana for four. Monito is in a two hamon as a doena banana, Pokomchika Catalo, Romanu Jeto, Amochika Mudomaza Shaza, Ronco Giba, Muyo Nasa Doza, Mio Drum, Minamia Wadeta, Anya Sadora, Alabania, not the G. Jeje no no when I'm a season. But that she has sold Ghana Health Service, the USA's boss.
And these are some of your text messages. Jacob Amwak, KNUST. The NPP collected raw data from the Ghana Statistical Service to calculate inflation on their own. What was the result? We are tired of the NPP. They oppose everything by the NDC. Tay Winneba, respect for the rule of law is a major problem in Ghana. Departments and institutions should be firm and apply the law fairly. By this, we can develop as a nation. AU Farouk, the call for public servants to resign when contesting elections is a call in the right direction. And Baba Musa UDS says the NDC has come to stay and shall withstand any internal wrangling by his grace. And this is where we wrap up for tonight's edition of Behind the News. Gifty Oboshi Broom controlled the sound. Bright Kofi Agama, Kingsley Obintre, Christopher Siedu, Phyllis Kofi, and John Pobi were my producers. Have a good evening.